Hey, Kyle here. I'm the pastor of Island Pond. I want to thank you for checking out our videos. Whether you're listening by podcast, watching online, or watching on television, my prayer is that God will use this message to bless you, encourage you, and challenge you today. If you want more information about our church, or if you want to watch other messages, you can go to www.islandpondbc.com. If you live in the Hampstead, New Hampshire area, come on out. Right now, our services are at 10:30 a.m. on Sunday morning in Hampstead, New Hampshire. All right, let's go ahead and dive in to the message today. Let's go ahead and open up to James chapter 1. We're going to start this morning's message. There's also a teaching sheet where you can follow along with the message. It should be in the bulletin there. So I read a story this week about a 100-pound black bear, a little black bear, and he was out in Pennsylvania, and he came across this cooking jar, this jar that had some cooking oil in it, and he just couldn't resist. He sniffed it, sort of poked his head in, and he wanted that oil, and so he put his head all the way in the jar, and it got stuck in the jar. And apparently, this is a true story from what I read, it remained on his head for 11 days. How do you know? Because the people in that town saw a black bear walking around with a jar on his head for 11 days. They could hear him, they said, just sort of walking and banging into things as he walked around. And finally, they tracked him down and wanted to help him, so they cornered him into someone's backyard, and after falling into the pool several times, they were able to wrangle him into the position where they could yank the jar off of his head and set him free. Whew. Now, I'm willing to bet that none of us would say we want to be like that black bear, right? None of us? All right, I don't see any hands up. You're just scratching, right? Okay, so none of us are saying that we want to be like a bear with a jar stuck on our head. But the reality is that many of us get into situations where we have things stuck on us, or we are stuck in things. You know, there's these things that we're tempted by, and we go and we sniff, and then we stick our head in a little bit, and we stick our head in further, and next thing we know, it's stuck on us, and we walk around, figuratively speaking, with a big old jar on our head. And there's all sorts of temptations out there for us to get stuck into. Maybe it's some form of addiction. Maybe it's drugs or alcohol or lust or gambling. You know, you want it, so you sniff it, you stick your head in, and then you're stuck in it. Maybe it's not one of those things. Maybe it's just material possessions. That newest thing that you just feel like you have to have. You need it. Yeah, at all costs, you're willing to put away all your hard-earned money for that one thing. Maybe it's, you know, that new phone or that car or that clothing item or that boat that you just have to have. We want, and we want, and we want, and we're willing to spend more than we have in order to get that thing. I remember, now I like electronics, I'll admit that, and I read about 2 months ago a biography on Elon Musk, who has done a number of things, but he helped develop the Tesla car. So when I got to the end of the biography, and it told all these cool things about that car, I said to myself, I want a Tesla. I want a Tesla. And so I went online. You can only order them online, apparently. I went online, and I went to the website, and I looked at all the cool features and the stations where you can go and get powered up for free. And then I looked at the price, and I compared it to the price to what I had, and it didn't work out. Didn't work out. But if I had the money, you may have seen a shiny new Tesla out in the parking lot as you walked in this morning. Temptation. It's just there. That greed, that coveting is amongst all of us. We want, and we want it. We're not careful. We'll sniff at it. We'll stick our head in it. and we'll get ourselves in lots of trouble. Now, in the passage this morning, we're going to see how James is going to be talking about the dangers of temptation. And he's going to be giving us really an alternative to following after the temptation. He's going to first of all talk about how dangerous it is and the problem with following temptation. But then at the end, he's going to talk about what we should be doing instead of giving in to our temptation. And so I'm going to begin this morning just by reading our passage straight through, and then I'll start pointing out the main parts of the passage. So let's go ahead. We're going to start with James chapter 1, verse 13. So James says, "Let no one say when he is tempted, 'I'm being tempted by God.' For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. But each person, when he is tempted, he is lured and enticed by his own desires. And then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, and we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures." So here's the first thing that I want you to see from our passage, and we're just going to work our way through the passage this morning. In verse 13, here's what I want you to see, that everyone is tempted. Everyone is tempted. He says, let no one say when he is tempted. It's not if he's tempted, but when he's tempted. You see, for all of us, temptation's coming. It's coming. And you can't hide from temptation. You can't avoid temptation. Now, there's things that we can do to minimize temptation in our life, but everyone is going to be tempted throughout their life. Even Jesus was tempted. Matthew chapter 4, 1. Then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the wilderness to be tempted by the devil. And so Jesus, who is perfect, was tempted. But if you were to continue on through Matthew chapter 4, you see he was tempted, but he did not give in to the temptation. He did not sin. The devil tempted him, but he said, no. And he sent the devil away. Now, we are obviously not Jesus, but he is setting that standard, that precedent for us to follow, that we should strive for, that when we are tempted, yes, we should expect to be tempted, but we should say no to temptation when it comes. So, everyone is tempted, but second, here's the second thing I want you to see. We need to recognize the source of temptation. Verse 13, let no one say when he is tempted, I am being tempted by God. For God cannot be tempted with evil, and he himself tempts no one. So when we are tempted, we have the tendency to do is to blame. When we give in to that sin, we're like, oh, it's not my fault. Think of it, if you've read Acts or Genesis 1, 2, 3, and so on, you saw when Adam gave in to a sin, who did he blame? The woman. Who did Eve blame? The snake. And it went on and on. It was not Adam's fault. It was not Eve's fault. It was none of their faults. It was the other person's fault. And we have the tendency to do that same thing. When we give in to the temptation, we're like, no, it's not my fault. It's not my fault. And clearly, James, by saying this, must have heard some people saying something like that. Yeah, I sin, but it's not my fault. And James is saying, no, it is your fault. Don't blame God. Don't blame God for this. It is you who did this. I read a story this week about a woman who was struggling in her marriage. And then she became a Christian. And things started to look up at that point. And she shared her faith with her husband, but her husband didn't want anything to do with it. And their marriage, though, continued to struggle even after she became a Christian. So after a while, she went to a counselor. And the counselor, the marriage counselor, ended up taking advantage of her and seducing her. And that obviously led to all sorts of complications with her and her marriage. And then she eventually went to a pastor. And this is what she told the pastor. She said, "I asked God to lead me to the right person," and talking about the counselor, "and he led me to this man. So it's God's fault. He is to be blamed for what happened." And that led to years of bitterness from the lady because she was blaming God for what happened. Now, I read that later on, she eventually did come around and repent of what she had done before God. And then happily, she was able to reconcile with her husband, and eventually her husband even became a Christian. So it all turned out well for them, but it was a rough patch. And some of that roughness was simply because she was blaming God for something that she had given into. And this lady did what we do too often, right? We blame God for something that we have done ourselves. And James says, no, God cannot be tempted with evil. It's not in his nature. And likewise, he cannot tempt us. He will not tempt us with sin. Now listen, God allows us to go through trials. We saw that last week in the first part of James chapter 1. God even can send trials our way. God can allow people to be tempted. Jesus was tempted. God allowed Job to be tempted and to be tested. But God will allow it, but he's not the source of that temptation. And so the point of saying all of this, what James is getting at, is that we need to take responsibility for our own actions. Verse 14, but each person is tempted when he's lured and enticed by his own desire. By his own desire. You see, when we get ourselves into trouble is when we just start to give in to our own desire. We start to say, you know, we like to say other things, blaming other people. The devil made me do it. My parents didn't raise me right. I have an addiction. It's mental. My spouse is not meeting my needs. I'm under a lot of stress. Or how often then do we just blame God straight out? God made me this way. Since God is in control, he's ordained it. God put me in a difficult job, so he must want me to respond in this way. God gave me this difficult professor, and the only way that I can pass is by cheating. You could go on and on. God gave me these appetites and these passions. I'm just using what he's given me. The Scottish poet Robert Burns wrote this, "Thou knowest that thou hast formed me with passions wild and strong. And listening to their witching voice has often led me wrong." You see, all of these, in some way, are ways that we like to just shrug off the responsibility of ourselves and put it on someone else. James, on the other hand, is saying that, no, when we are tempted, it's you. It's you. Now, later in James, he's going to talk about the devil's role in all of this. But for right now, this first step, what you have to see is that you are the ultimate one responsible. Me. I am responsible for my own actions. So here's the fourth thing that we need to see. Fourth, recognize the appeal of sin. Look at verse 14. But each person is tempted when he is lured and enticed by his own desires. So this, ready for a deep thought here? This is the bummer with temptation. Temptation is tempting. Write that down. You got some space. By its nature, temptation is something that is very appealing to us. It's going to look different for each of us. But temptation is just so darn tempting. And James is from the coast, and so he uses fishing language. He talks about how, fishing. I asked Kale to get me a fishing rod, and so he got me a kid's one here. He didn't think very highly of my fishing abilities. I put this on here. Just pretend this is a hook. I didn't want to poke anyone's eye out, but James is using the fishing language here because he's saying that people are lured and enticed by their own desires. There's these things that appeal to us. Maybe it's, I don't know, how about cookies? Are some of us lured by cookies? I know I am sometimes. And it goes on the lure here. All right, I told him I've never done this before. So, and then what do you do? You just sort of throw it out there, and then you try to reel someone in. I see no one's grabbing the cookie, huh? Everyone's waiting for other stuff. But then if you grabbed it, you'd get yourself in all sorts of trouble. All right, no one likes cookies. What about money? All right, let's try this. This is a 20. I meant to look in the offering to see if anyone had put a larger bill, but I forgot. No. Kale's like, I knew this was going to happen. Here, let's see if we can do this. There we go. So the money, that sin just goes out there. And it's waiting. It's waiting for someone to grab it. But you all know what happens when someone grabs into that. There's that hook, right? And then you grab it, and then you bring it in there, and you just sort of get the hook right in that fish, and then they are in deeper trouble than they would have been if they had just let the temptation go by. See, James is saying that we need to be careful with these kinds of temptations because temptation will get us into trouble. Now, I'm going to talk about that in a moment, but first of all, it's appealing. It's appealing. A temptation loves to appeal to us. I read this story here about a fisherman. This pastor said that he was out with his family fishing. He said, one summer, my wife Barbara and I and our boys spent the week fishing in northern Maine. And in the final hours of the final day, my boys caught the biggest smallmouth bass I had ever seen, 5 pounds in 1 ounce. Those are cosmic dimensions for a smallmouth bass. The old bass, I can tell, as best as I can tell, was over 10 years old. So for 3,650 days, he had resisted every ploy known to man around Grand Lake Stream, Maine, until August 1989. And on that fateful afternoon, my boys were slowly trolling a salmon-colored soft plastic spinner-bladed jig innocuously named Little Fishy. And when it passed by the lair of the monster bass, the combination of the speed and the lure and the depth and the slant of the sun and the refraction of the light ineluctably dragged the old bronze-backed bass away from his lair, just as the Greek word lured in our text describes. When he began to follow the lure, enticed, as the text has it, by his peculiar wiggle and the delicate fibrillations, so that he opened his mouth wide and in a sudden burst engulfed the jig. My boys' shouts echoed across the lake And today, that fish's grand painted mummified form graces my son's wall. The appeal of sin. You see, there's not just one sin ever, is there? It's like that chip commercial. I bet you can't eat just one. You have one and you just want more and more and more. There's that appeal. So if we want to avoid it, the first thing we need to recognize is that our temptation is going to be appealing to us. It's going to be appealing to us. But here's the fifth thing. We need to recognize the consequences of engaging in sin. Verse 15 says, then desire, when it has conceived, gives birth to sin. And sin, when it is fully grown, brings forth death. So the illustration that James is giving here is that it is really a sad one, that you give in to the sin, and then when you give in to it, you're essentially conceiving or becoming pregnant with something that you don't want inside of you. I remember when I was about 8 years old, my parents went on this trip to visit some friends. And we went to their house, and my friends turned on this movie that no 8-year-old should ever see. It was called Alien. And there's this one famous scene that I saw. It's called the chest buster scene. And there's this person that's conceived an alien inside of them without knowing them. And there they are in the spaceship, just minding their own business, eating their food. And when all of a sudden they start to cough. And then it gets worse. And then there's stomach pain coming out. And then they start convulsing. And then they throw themselves on the back of the table. And you start to see this alien poke himself in the stomach. And next thing you know, there's blood squirting everywhere. And an alien pops out of his stomach. I gave the PG version of the picture here. You're welcome. Now, this is a gross scene that I have no idea why my parents let me watch it. But this is a realistic illustration of the danger of sin. Because we are enticed and lured into it, and then we pursue it. And then we engage in that sin. And what does it do? It births in us something that we don't want. And if we are not careful, if we don't stop, it will lead to death, is what James is saying. And my hope is that if you will take a look at your life and see and think about the consequences of the sin, of engaging in the sin that you're tempted to engage in, that if you will recognize what it will lead you down the path to do or to become, that you will stay far, far away from it. I read a book a few months ago about the nuclear disaster in Ukraine back in 1986 in Chernobyl at the nuclear power plant. And the first night when the power plant exploded, these firemen from just down the road went over to it and just started putting out the fire, not really understanding the danger of the radiation there. And so they stayed there all night putting out the fire with no protection. Now, they didn't have a lot to begin with to put on anyways, but they were there all night, and then they started quickly feeling sick later on. And a lot of the deaths came from that first group that was there that first night that was exposed to an enormous amount of radiation. So contrast that. Let me show you now a picture of what this power plant looks like now. Let's show the next picture. Now, they couldn't fix it, so what'd they do? They put a massive dome over it, a massive dome over it to protect people from getting too close to it and to protect the radiation from coming out. Even more, let's go to the next picture. They've made a massive exclusion zone surrounding the power plant saying, don't live here. Not safe. It's not safe. Don't come any closer. And if we will understand the danger of sin,
then I hope that we too will put a massive dome around our life and that we will set up exclusion zones that we know we can't go any closer to this particular type of sin. And it, again, it's going to look different for each person. If you're tempted by alcohol, then you're going to stay far away from alcohol. If you're tempted with other things, you're going to stay far away from that. If you're tempted with lust, you're going to set up things on your computer and your phone so that you're not tempted to go and look at things. All these different things. I hope that you will set up exclusion zones in your life to keep the temptation further and further away from getting too close to you. So here's the last thing, though, that I want you to see that James talks about. So that we need to know that a better life comes from following God. So up till this point, he's talked about the danger of sin and how it's so appealing, but don't give in to it. But now in these next two verses, he talks about how far better things come from putting your faith and following God. Verse 16 says, "Do not be deceived, my beloved brothers. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. Of his own will, he brought us forth by the word of truth, that we should be a kind of first fruits of his creatures." So what James is saying, he says, first of all, don't be deceived. Don't be confused about this. Don't give in to all that sin and think that's the better life. When you think that sin or following temptation is better for you, then you are deceived. You're deceived. The better life, he's saying, comes from following God. Following God. And these last few verses are really deep. Let me just sort of summarize it. In the previous verse, it talks about how following the path of sin leads to death. When I think of death, I think of darkness. But he then contrasts that in verse 17 with God being the Father of lights, in whom there is no shadow in him, verse 17. And then he brought forth us the word of truth. In John chapter 1, the word is Jesus. So he's saying he's brought forth Jesus to us, and that we are the result through Jesus, that we are his first fruits. And so by following Jesus, we are changed from death to life, from darkness to light, from nothing good to everything good in us. And that is what we get when we put our faith, when we follow God. And I don't know where each of you are at, spiritually speaking. I don't know what you're struggling with inside, but I want to tell you, you have a choice. You have a choice. Will you follow the path of death, or will you follow the path of life? And if you give in to temptation, then you are walking down that path of death. On the other hand, following Jesus is the path of life. John 10:10 says, Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and have it abundantly. Jesus wants you to have a good life. An abundant life. Now, I'm not talking having everything you want physically, because that's not good for you. But he wants you to be spiritually growing and to be fruitful spiritually. And he says, like in Psalm 23, that he will lead you and guide you. He will be your shepherd. And he will cause you, your cup to overflow, Psalm 23:5. But to do this, you must choose the path of life. You must choose it. So I want to challenge you this morning. Don't bite into sin. Don't follow the enticing nature here of sin. Don't bite it. It's trying to get you. It wants you. But don't give in. And if you will walk down the path of life, every good and perfect gift is that way. I'm going to close with this story that I read in the book, Half the Sky. The authors are writing about the trafficking problem throughout the world. And every year, they talk about how young girls around the world are taken from their communities and are forced into slavery. And the sad part of this is that once they're forced into slavery, they become addicted to drugs many times in those situations. And it makes it harder for them to get out of that because they want to get those drugs to stay, and they stay in the slavery, in the forced problems that they're in. And they tell the story about this one girl from Cambodia. And I named her Tracy because she had a name that none of us would really understand. And so Tracy was enslaved as a young girl for 5 years. But when she was a teenager, she was rescued from her enslavement. And the story goes that they took her back to her home. And when they got out of the car, her aunt saw her and screamed and cried and ran up to her and gave her a huge hug. And all of her family ran up to her so happy to see her. And then they had an impromptu party that night. They had singing and dancing, and everyone was so excited that their lost child was back. She returned to the house of her mother and father, but the story goes that she didn't stay there long, that just a little while longer, in the early morning, she left that house, and she returned to her pimp. Apparently that she was craving the methamphetamine so much that she had been given prior that she returned to her previous life because she wanted those drugs. Now, this is a heartbreaking story, and I have no doubt, I think that we would be thinking something like, how could she do that? How could she go back to her life of slavery? How often do we do the same in other areas? And so I want to encourage you this morning that if you are looking sin in the face, turn away from it. Yes, yes, it will be luring. It will be enticing. But don't give into it. Don't bite into it, because it will just drag you down the path that you don't want to go. So choose life instead. And if you've never put your faith in Jesus Christ, and it simply begins by turning to him and asking, saying, God, I want you to be the Lord of my life. So let's go ahead and take a moment now, and let's pray.